Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Carl Smithson, CEO and Executive Director of Hamac Strategy. Welcome back, Carl. How's life treating you?
Not bad, Phil. Thanks a lot. All good.
Absolutely, yeah. We saw the news that Hamac Strategy has reached what could prove to be a transformational milestone with its maiden independent NI 43-101 resource at the Akoko Gold Project in Ghana. The company has outlined a 210,000-ounce gold resource, including more than 120,000 ounces of shallow oxide material that could be mined using low-cost, free-dig, open-pit methods. With recoveries of up to 94%, only around a third of the 15-kilometre gold trend drilled and a preliminary economic assessment now underway, investors will be keen to understand whether Akoko can become Hamac's first producing asset. Carl, this is the first independently verified resource at Akoko, and nearly half of it is already in the higher confidence measured and indicated categories. What does this recent news and resource do for the value of the project, and what are the key milestones investors should watch for as you move towards a PEA and potentially production?
Yeah, thanks, Phil. Good intro, by the way. It's what it's done is kind of crystallized what is there, what we always thought was there. There's been a lot of work done on this asset, historically speaking, you know, and we've just added to that, you know, with our latest rounds of drilling. So, you know, this report that we put out yesterday, the day before, was, you know, really based on a lot of work, 26,000 meters of drilling, a whole load of assays that go along with that, mapping, trenching, et cetera, et cetera. And we were able to kind of combine all of that data, endorse the historical data with our own, you know, drilling that we'd done. Everything kind of gelled quite nicely. So, yeah, we could pull it all into a single resource statement. And as you say, it's 210,000 ounces. It's near surface. It is the start. I think this thing's going to go bigger, right? But, you know, I don't think we're going to get too many pats on the back for drilling for the next 2 years to make it half a million ounces. You know, what we have is something that I think can be moved down the sort of development line, if you like, to a sort of a position where you can say, okay, this is what it's going to cost to develop this asset. You can get going with that if you can fund it, and we can talk to that later. And then, you know, you can look at the bigger picture whilst you're actually developing something and generating some cash flow. I mean, this is the junior life that we lead, right? We're not in this sort of big league where, you know, you can sit on resources forever and a day and just you know, keep drilling happily. And, you know, we don't have that luxury, unfortunately. So we're embarking on this PEA. It's going to be probably a three-month exercise. We're still to appoint the independent consultants. We're just going through the final rounds of discussions with a few groups. We're going to pick the right one for us that's going to give us what we want at the price that we can pay. And certainly before the end of the year, we'll have the outcome of that report, which in essence is going to say, okay, you've got a mining scenario here of X thousand ounces mined over X number of years. This is what it's going to cost to put into production. This is what it's going to cost to operate it. These are your kind of cash flows, your margins, your free cash flows, and a financial model at the end of it. So, you know, typical sort of, it's almost going to be kind of a pre-fee study, if you like. We're going to sort of go a little bit harder on the confidence limits in terms of, you know, the capital and the design of engineering design of what we're going to put there, and, you know, have something that really is readily fundable and something that you can use to then convert your prospecting license to a mining license and get all the necessary approvals in place. So that's the plan.
That's the plan. Yeah, sounds good. I mean, you've only drilled around, I think it's about 35% of that 15-kilometer gold anomaly, and you've defined that 210,000 ounces. But, you know, how much bigger do you believe Akoko could become? And do you see this as a potential standalone, let's say 20,000 ounce per year operation, or is it the beginning of something much larger from Hamac in Ghana?
It's the beginning, as I see it. There are a lot of opportunities in Ghana, but if you just take Akoko as a standalone, right? You're right. I mean, we've drilled a third of the strike. It's. I don't see any reason why the drilled out strike of further oxide sulfide material cannot continue if we put the resources to that. But you know what we have at the moment, this 200,000 ounces is something that we should really look at in terms of, you know, how we can best sort of move it towards development. And yeah, I mean, looking at, you know, if you just focus on the oxides, you've got probably 120,000 plus ounces sitting in oxides. You know, an operation, as you said, actually, this is my thinking as well, 20,000 ounces a year, you know, for 5-6 years, at this gold price with potential margins that are on offer here. You surely can mine this for less than 2,000 an ounce, right? In this environment, it's going to be good cash flow. It can has potential to be good cash flow if we're able to get it up and running. So definitely, that's got to be the focus. And then the bigger picture, developing, as I say, the next stage, 500,000, 1 million ounces will come in due course.
Carl, this is great news, I think, and ultimately, I mean, even if I take the 103,000 measured and indicated of what you've got at $40 to $100 an ounce, which is really the going rate for the measured and indicated, you're talking about between $4 million and $10 million, even if you wanted just to move it on, which I obviously is not one of the things you're going to do. So, from the perception of this 120 ounces of free digging, how much more do you think in the 65% that hasn't been investigated, do you see that that could be increased? In other words, how much of this gold is easily gettable, I suppose, if that is a statement?
Of the existing, you mean, or of the potential
The
stuff that we can,
potential.
the
The
potential,
potential. Because when you start digging, you're not going to just stop digging because that's where
No, no, no. I
the
mean, you'll be,
resource has been
no,
indicated.
no. You obviously the PEO, you'll have a pit design, right? You'll have two pits, basically, pit shells designed, and then beyond that, the anomalies extend, as does the digging, right? The local diggers are kind of throughout the area. It's like whack-a-mole. They're in one area, then they'll leave. That you'll get them to go, and then they're in the other area. That kind of thing. So definitely, there's gold along strike here, and they're exploiting, as you can imagine, just by pick and shovel. They're exploiting the oxides, the near surface stuff. So definitely the trend of the mineralization will continue beyond what we've drilled out ourselves. To give you a number on that, it's impossible to do right now without doing the drilling, but it's entirely feasible to see this double triple along strike just on the oxides, the upper 50 meters. And that's even before we start talking sulfides at depth, right? I mean, yes, we've got some resource. It's a little bit less confident because of the drilling density down there is not as good as near surface, but the sulfides are there. With through further drilling, that will be enhanced from the inferred and some indicated to indicated and measured, and that's then this is down to 80 meters, our maximum drilling depth. But the few holes that have gone deeper than that have intersected high grade sulfide, like the primary ore, if you like, the stuff that's in situ.
Yeah, the
And
sulfides
obviously,
tend to be a higher grade just for
and
okay.
some
Do you
wide
want to
intersections.
explain why that is? I mean, effectively it's been
Well,
erupted from below and
it's not as dissipated, if that's the right word, that you would get in the oxide. So over the millennia, let's say, through erosion and that, the gold's been released from the, let's call it the quartz vein, if for want of a better word, the fresh sulfides, and it's kind of been dissipated and spread around in the sort of movement and erosion of the upper oxide. So, and water solubility and transport, that kind of thing. So, you get this kind of spread of lower grade stuff above the higher grade in situ. That makes sense.
No. Okay, so if you were to use your calculations of 2 to 3 times of the free digging, then what you're actually talking about is 12 million to 30 million is actually its value. This is not if we dig it up, because if we dig it up, it's going to be worth significantly more, obviously. I mean, an operation of 20,000 ounces a year partnered with somebody else, and this is really where the next question comes. You are a small cap. You're going to need somebody to help you. So how does that work out?
Optionality, I guess. I think, we've made a good start with the resource statement. It is robust, it's real, it's there. The PEA will then sort of turn that into a see-through mining operation in terms of, what it's going to produce, what it's going to cost. I think at that time, potential partners is an option for us. A bigger group that can come in and, maybe take over the lead, and we kind of sit back and, take a ride with them, basically. Or you can try and fund this yourself, Kevin, at the end of the day. And I'm not talking through equity, because it just doesn't make sense on our market cap to raise, let's say, for example, and this is my wild example, $50 million to capitalize a mine here. You're never going to do that on a 3 million quid market cap through equity, right? Now, we've appointed Verdant Capital. There was an announcement a couple of weeks ago that these are going to be our financial advisors, small boutique Pan-African group out of Joburg, but they've got offices in throughout Africa and a representation in Ghana, right? They've got very good access to funders, to family offices, private equity groups, the local banks, which tend to or can finance smaller operations in the region, and also royalty and streaming companies, right? And they've just done a deal for a company called Heath Gold in Ghana. 65 million was raised as a royalty, I think it was, or was it a stream? I can't remember, but that was primarily through Trafigura. So they can sort of attract these kind of funding solutions and partners to us. And Verdant actually invested into Hamac as well, as we announced a couple of weeks ago. They put a couple of hundred thousand pounds in at 0.8 pence. Why? Because they see it for what it is. Hamac is undervalued compared to the asset that we have, and if they are part of the solution in terms of bringing the right structured finance to develop Akoko, then they as a shareholder would stand to benefit. So it's quite good forward thinking from their part as well.
Just so people understand in terms of Ghana, because obviously everybody's look probably thinks Ghana deepest darkest Africa. Ghana's estimated, I'm just reading here what I've pulled up. Ghana's estimated to host around 80 to 100 million ounces of measured and indicated gold. So it ain't no sort of non-resourced place, because there's been a lot of work from AngloGold, Ashanti, Newmont. I'm going to struggle to pronounce these. Ahafo, Newmont again, AHFMI, Gold Fields at Tarkwa, Gold Fields at Damang, Persian Mining at Edikan, Asante Gold, Bibian and Chirano. All of those are 8 to 10 ounce, million ounces plus assets. Do we have the potential for huge scale where we are or not?
Yes, you do. Where those most of those mines that you mentioned are on the Ashanti Gold Belt, which hosts all of these major mines. We're on the southern end of that Ashanti. There's a gold mine just to the east of us, sorry, west of us, and Zema as well, pretty much on that trend. And we've made the comment, and it's in the CPR as well, that we're on this trend. Akoko is definitely on this trend. Yes, we're focusing on the oxides because that's what we have to do as a small cap. But actually, this structure, the Ashanti structure, runs through our licenses, which host gold, as we know, all the way through these major mines. So, you can extrapolate if you like, but there's a good chance that we basically have the same structures through Akoko as on these major mines. Now, that's going to take a lot more work to prove, but yeah, it's encouraging from that perspective. And you talk about Ghana, it's well, the reason why it was called the Gold Coast, right, in the old days, and it's the mine gold there from antiquity times. And I think what was last year's production, 6 million plus ounces
Yeah,
coming from,
it's the largest gold producer now in Africa, isn't it, Ghana?
and it's a country that works, right? It works, it's structured, it's got decent infrastructure, the laws, the English law, all of that. It kind of works as a country, and hence, you've got all these major companies there that have been there for years and years. It's a good place to do business.
Yeah, very good. Okay, so moving away from the asset, which I think being conservative is probably worth $12 to $30 million once everything is working out. Verdant Capital obviously see a potential there. Tell us a little bit about what's happened with one, the warrants, and two, then the Yorkville situation as well.
Right. So on the warrants, we announced on Monday the results of the offer. So we did some soundings and listened to shareholder groups, etc., who were kind of concerned of the warrants, the number, the warrants that were out there. So they have primarily a year to run from July this year to July next year. So we listened to them and thought, well, how can we help these warrant holders that are uncomfortable or unhappy with the warrants and the share price and where they are? So an offer was made to all these warrant holders to say, look, we hear you. If you really want to exit from this warrant without having to fork out any cash and exercise, we'll offer you five, or give us five of your warrants for one new share in Hamac, right? And that offer was made to 450 million warrant holders. Okay, not individually, but cumulatively speaking.
If you had that many shareholders, wow.
And the uptake was, I think it was 180 million. So yeah, just less than half basically decided to accept that offer. The other half, of which I'm one, decided to no. I believe there's going to be value in this warrant in the longer term. We are undervalued. We believe that the process that we're following now with Akoko taking it through to the next stage of PEA hopefully is going to unlock some more some value into Hamak and basically make that warrant more valuable and exercisable. That can obviously bring in some cash and benefit the company at the same time. So yeah, it was just under half took it up and that's fine. We made the offer, and that was the acceptance.
What's the date of the end? What's the end date of this warrant? And the
Think
warrant's a point 8p, isn't it?
it's the 3rd of July, 2027.
Okay, so we've got
You
11
got
months left.
11 months to run, and you just don't know what's going to happen between now and then in terms of the warrants. All right, so I'm not saying now we don't try and help again at some stage in the future. Nothing's off the table, Kevin. We try and help as much as possible.
But the reality is, from a Hamak situation, the 270 million shares at 0.8 would bring in a couple of million pounds, and that would actually be very helpful if and when it comes.
So look, I mean, if you never want to think ahead in terms of share price and that, but if the market recognizes the asset and gives us the credit for it, and if the share price can then exceed the warrant price, then you maybe get some people exercising.
Yeah, indeed. Okay. And as it goes towards the time, the premium will need to be very little, probably, for people to exercise, because it's going to make sense for them to do it. Okay, so that's the warrants. Moving on to Yorkville, you remove the convertibility option on the Yorkville thing, which I think was fantastic for shareholders. And 1.6 million that's outstanding. Payments are going to start end of August and a 10 month pay down. So how do you view that now?
Yeah, well, it is what it is at the moment. It's there. Yorkville have been kind of accommodating and helpful to us. Obviously, this is a commitment that we have to make now to pay that loan down or find another solution for it, either through Yorkville or through other means. You're right. I mean, it's kind of a soft payment schedule to begin with for the first 2 or 3 months, and then it kind of goes up to sort of more normalized levels, but amortized over 10 months, as you say. Now we still have the ATM in place, which if volumes are there, we could utilize the ATM, which was always meant to be the vehicle for dealing with loan repayments. We haven't utilized it yet, primarily because the volumes haven't been sort of in our favor, but volumes come and go, so we just have to realize that we can't rely totally on the ATM, but it's there as a potential tool to use, and we'll be looking at other solutions as well to help us meet our commitments regarding that loan.
Okay, so how much of assets of gold, Bitcoin, etc., does Hamak hold?
It's about 1.2 or $3 million. I haven't checked lately on the Bitcoin price, to be honest with you, so it's about that.
Bitcoin price is about $65,000 at the moment. So, yeah, so 1.2 to $1.3 million. So we can't completely smash those together, but when we look at the what's left on the loan as opposed to the assets that the company holds, they're not a million miles apart. Not that you're going to sell those, but I'm just looking at it from the asset valuation base of the situation, which would leave this asset, the gold asset that you have, in a very good and very strong position. What other assets does Hamak have in terms of resource-based assets? Because originally this is what the company was going to do. That's why it was called Hamak Gold.
Oh, you mean in terms of projects? Oh, right. Okay. So no, it's just the Liberian asset that we kind of started life out with Hamak, the Nimba project, which we've done a fair amount of work, and I think $3 million has been spent over 3 years on that project. We've made there what I think is a meaningful discovery. I always refer to this first intersection that we drilled at surface was 20 meters at 7 grams a ton, and this is opposite the border of the Ivory Coast, where Ity Gold Mine is located. It's about 25 k's as the crow flies on the same structure. So yeah, we've never managed to repeat that hole, but we've had other intersections of lower grade and a little bit narrower. But it needs more work. And my estimation is, you probably need to do a 3,000-5,000 meter drilling campaign there to really get a grip on that particular asset and the discovery, and put something credible on the table like we've done at Akoko. But plain fact of the matter is, we don't have the capacity to do that right now, financially speaking. We think Akoko is the quicker route to value creation, i.e., this year, as opposed to Nimba, which is probably going to be another year plus of drilling. So, we'd be considering partnerships for Nimba. We have done in the past. We were almost there actually with one group from the Middle East that fell through for whatever reason. And we've got another group in the data room at the moment looking at it. But, no deals are done. But we are actively considering partnerships for taking Nimba forward whilst we focus our own resources on Akoko. I think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. A question which is not really related to Hamak. Where do you see the gold price?
It's a good question because, as part of the PEA, we have to look at this and look at scenarios, okay? And what we are thinking of in the sort of financial modeling of the asset is running gold prices from a low base of 3,000 an ounce up to about 5,500 an ounce. I think somewhere there, I'm hopefully more at the upper end than the lower end there, but certainly I think, it's the central bank buying hasn't gone out of fashion. I think, yeah, there's certain reasons for the drag on the gold price at the moment, but maybe it's found its floor at four, and it's going to go better than that looking forward. So, but anyway, look, we'll have to model the downside as well as the upside in the PEA, and there'll be a sort of a base case in there as well, which currently would probably be in the 4,000 region for the model.
Yeah, I mean, I think the market was taken aback by sort of $1,800-$1,900 gold suddenly going to $5,500 gold, which was a big move, obviously. But I think you're right, maybe 4,000 is the bottom, unless we have a shock and it drops maybe to 3,500 and then pops back up again, because I don't think it would stay there very long if it did. Mainly because, all-in sustaining costs of the mines are also increasing, especially in the Western world, because of inflation and things are going up in value. So we are in a situation where it's likely that we're going to have increased valuations in gold, which is going to make your thing more profitable. So, Akoko, if you had to be a betting man, what are the all-in sustaining costs of getting a shovel or a big digger and digging the stuff up? It ain't $2,000.
1723.
That's what you know, or that's a guess.
That's all on red or whatever you call it. No, it's got to be, well, definitely less than 2,000. It's free dig at the end of the day. It's heap leach. You're trucking, you're hauling. So, looking at comparables around that neck of the woods, I mean, there was a model ran on this a couple of 3 years ago that put it at less than 1,600. So you've had some inflation, as you say, in there, but you've had a better gold price as well. So,
Yeah, you're looking at a 50% margin anyway, at the very least, I would imagine.
I think so.
And 20,000 ounces of gold is $80 million, and half of that is $40 million a year.
Yeah.
So we just had another company announce actually today, African Pioneer. They've just done a deal with a Chinese company. They're only left with 26% of the company, but that still amounts to $17 million a year free cash flow. And you're in a similar situation, I think.
Yeah.
The only situation is that's copper with some gold, you're going to be gold.
Yeah.
So the reality of this situation is that if you can get a partner, this is going to be a game changer for the company, I think. And
Yep.
yeah,
Yep.
that's it. Okay, well, good luck. We hope we'll get some more news from you guys in the not too distant, but you seem to have dealt with a lot of the issues that are there as much as you could. And yeah, let's see whether the market attributes the value to the company.
Yeah, we'll keep plugging away that you can rely on.
Indeed. Okay, Carl, thanks for your
All right.
time, and we'll speak to you shortly.
Thanks. That's Kevin. Thanks, Phil.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.